If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world, whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search Press and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. Welcome back to Needle Exchange, a celebration of embroidery and the stories woven into every stitch. This is the second part of my Needle Exchange with Alison Carpenter-Hughes, whose machine embroidered work creates joyful portraits as well as mixed media pieces that have a hint of darkness. In this episode, Alison shares her connection with Leicester's rich textile heritage and her passion for community art projects, including the Leicester Textile Festival and Mission Magpie. We also explore what it takes to use money as a medium for machine embroidery. And of course, because it's the second part of our exchange, we find out the kind of music, the kind of films, the kind of books that she likes, and an unusual historical fact that not a lot of people know about Alison. If Alison's award-winning machine embroidery takes your fancy, then be sure to listen to episodes 25 and 26 with the artist Julie Heaton, whose latest piece won the 2024 Hand and Lock Open Award for Embroidery. And if you're feeling inspired, you can find other episodes at the Needle Exchange website and join our... And if you're feeling inspired, you can find more episodes at the Needle Exchange website. And heck, why don't you subscribe to the newsletter as well to keep up with all the stitchy goodness. It's a pleasure talking to Alison. She's charismatic. She's talented. We had a great chat. We ended up chatting for ages afterwards as well. It's just the way these things go sometimes. But it was great to talk to her. And I will be back next week with somebody else from the world of stitch. So until then, enjoy the show. I wanted to ask you about Leicester, because I feel like your relationship to Leicester is quite important.
Is it? In what way? Why do you get that feeling?
Well, because I've seen you did a community art project where you decorated the front of your house. There were lots of like colourful aspects to it. And as you said before, you quite like community art and you quite like other interventions. And then you had a project. In fact, no, let me put this properly correctly. I think you were the co-founder of the Leicester Textile Festival. So I feel like you have got a relationship with Leicester. And I wanted to explore that because I'm developing my own relationship with my hometown, having started an art gallery. And I think it's interesting when you get involved in a place. And I kind of wanted your perspective on that.
Okay, so yes and no, because... I mean, I came up to Leicester because my husband of the time lived here, and I hadn't planned on coming to Leicester. So, and I've had a bit of a love-hate relationship with the place, to be quite frank. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a place I would have chosen to come to.
Yeah, yeah,
it took me quite a few years to fall in love with it. Mm-hmm. I do love it for lots of different reasons. It's an amazing multicultural place, mm-hmm. Possibly one of the most multicultural places in the country, and it gives it a really fascinating element, and just you meet lots of really beautiful, lovely people, and the so there's there's that element of it. And it's also, when I first came to Leicester, it did have quite an interesting art scene going on, which then kind of disappeared for quite a while. And then places like LCB Depot opened up, and it felt like things started to evolve again. And it has got a lot going on with the arts now. It's really vibrant. And one of the things, reasons why I started up the co-founded the Leicester Textiles Festival was because Leicester has a huge textile heritage, mm-hmm. But it's never really been explored that much. And we wanted to celebrate that, so we'd started actually working with LCB Depot to begin with, to put on some textile events, led events. So we were working with different artists and makers doing Skillshare sessions, and we had clothes swaps and textile swaps, and just kind of exploring it in different ways. And they were all free events. We wanted to put this on for the community and for them to be able to come in and enjoy it and start to see textiles in a different way, and also to explore the avenue of reusing stuff and repurposing. And because some of the Skillshare sessions we had were things like mending and visible mending as well as invisible mending, and then making things in doing embroidery that could go onto clothes, and just playing in that way. So it was so that was the kind of starting point. And then for a few years been thinking about a festival, and then it took time for it to build up, and it was quite an organic process. But we kept pushing it forward, and then got Arts Council funding to do that in 2023. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge learning curve. I mean, it didn't mm-hmm. all go as planned. and that is partly because that involves working with people.
So, yes.
And also taking on this huge project, and then, and although Rebecca Harvey Hobbs, who was the other co-founder, and I had lots of different experience in putting on art events in different ways and doing project management and things, and also being artist leads, putting a festival on is another beast. It was a huge learning curve, but it was really, really joyful as well, and got to know make amazing contacts. And we actually had so many different connections with different organizations and people around the city, shopping centers and small businesses and art centers and and different community groups. So we employed artists to come in and work with different community groups to create these big community collaborative pieces. And then we were working out with people in the county as well, and they could do their own thing. And then we had things like a Leicester Look Up, which was hanging baskets made from however people wanted to do them, but they were textile baskets. So people did these amazing crocheted and knitted and sewn versions of what hanging basket could be.
Yeah.
And so they were hanging out around the city, and it was it was great. I really enjoyed it, and elements of it, but it was also, it took a lot. I was quite ill after it. it was a really interesting experience. But from that, we then went on, we were offered a space in the Haymarket Shopping Centre, which is in the centre of Leicester City. We started to build a community hub from that, with lots of displays and everything being made from repurposed materials. And the response was called Mission Magpie, and then the response from the public was absolutely amazing. And and so much support from the manager of the Haymarket shopping centre as well. So I've been really lucky with community support, and I think that's part of the community aspect. And even when I did the house, that was a vehicle arts project, and I was commissioned to decorate the front of my house. And the and it was during the lockdowns, so of course nobody was really going anywhere or doing anything, and it was a way of having, other than their kind of daily walk, so it was a way of having, being able to go and see some art and see something different while not, you know, on a walk. And it it got to a point where it was, I think I worked out that I think it reached about 30,000 people, because the response in person as well as online was absolutely amazing. And so that was, you know, that was a really good feeling. But it was nice. I wanted to do something bright and colourful and just joyous. And it seemed to have that impact. And I was able to do bits during that as well, where I could give out art kits and things like that. So and people could also add to the installation as well. So I had a connection with a local charity where you paint stones and you leave them out for people to find in different places. And so people started painting stones and leaving them for other people to take, which isn't textiles related, but it's it was a multimedia installation, because I had real flowers in the piece, and as well as textile elements. So and also people started leaving random stuff that they've made as well, so it's quite a community collaboration. But I think in terms of it being connected to Leicester, I've moved away from Mission Magpie now, because I got the Develop Pure Creative Practice Fund from the Arts Council earlier last year, which will be going to an exhibition in the future in London. And so I want to sort of have more of a focus on my own practice again. But the it has, what I was saying earlier about doing that, I mean, it has informed my practice.
Yeah, that's interesting. Made me
realise how much I missed my own practice and that I needed to kind of connect back with that again. And it was, and also, you know, personal elements. I've had a lot going on through my life, so in recent years, and particularly in this year, and things like health issues and stuff like that. And I just thought, oh, actually, you know, this is a good point for me to step back and kind of look after myself. So so I think it's, kind of, there are really great aspects of it, but it can also take quite a toll mentally, because you are putting a lot of yourself out there. But I'm actually coming to a point now where in the next few months, my life's going to be completely changing, and I am going to be leaving Leicester. So it's kind of come, you know, full circle to what you were saying. It's now at a point where I want to move towards the sea, and but it's just come to a point where it's the right time to do it, and because of personal aspects. And so and every aspect of my life is going to be changing the next few months, so it's quite exciting, terrifying, but also exciting. So so it'll be interesting to see what new avenues it takes me down.
I've like the experience that I've got living in Crewe is not dissimilar, in as much as we moved up here because my wife got a job up here. And I'm not dissing Crewe, but no one ever thinks, oh, I'll move to Crewe. It's just one of those places, you know. But at the same time, in the same way with Leicester as well, and there's other places that, like, you know, like Nottingham and stuff like that. I think these are towns that no one really thinks much about, but they are. They're really diverse. And we've had a lot of quite quick success in terms of art implementation. Like, we've managed to turn an empty shop into an art gallery. And one of the things I found is that, like, I mean, our town, because it's got Victorian architecture, everyone lives quite closely, so people are already, I think, a bit more relaxed about the cultural diversity of a place that you might find is different in bigger towns. But what I found as well is, like, if we have artist-led workshops in a space, art is a great leveler, and people don't mind who they're sitting next to, whatever that person's background. A lot of that, like, the tension that may exist sort of fades away, I think, because you put people in a creative context and then they're just people being creative. Yes, and to me, that's been like one of the most beautiful things to kind of watch.
Yes, and I think that was very much the case with the textiles takeovers and the textile festival, and with Mission Magpie as well. And I mean, Rebecca has continued to do Mission Magpie and doing these amazing displays. And but one of the elements we found through doing all of those events and having those spaces is that it does really connect people, and also it gives people a place where they can be a little bit vulnerable as well. You know, quite often you'll get people coming in who need connection, and having that space there for them to do that and do it creatively and see things in a different way and kind of think out of the box and give them permission to be creative, because you can be creative with absolutely anything in your life. I mean, you can have really basic materials and be creative. So it's and I think that was a really important aspect of us showing that to people and giving them those opportunities to do that. So yeah, I think it's amazing.
Yeah. I love as well, we've got a badge maker, which is a rock solid piece of equipment in any art gallery.
Those are great, aren't they?
Yeah. So I just love it. Like if a family comes in and you see the kids making badges and the dad's just sitting there and I'm like, here, make a badge. Just get, you know what I mean? And get the dad to make a badge and then he's wearing a badge he makes and he'll be so uncomfortable about that. But at the end, like when his kids see that he's made a badge and they're over the moon, you just know it's a winner. And yeah. I just love that. It's just fun to use it and just go, look, you're not walking out of here. I don't care who you are. You might be some really old granddad really set in his ways. Do some colouring in, you know, just kind of force him to do it.
We had so many adults coming in and wanting to join in and what the children were doing, but it was I mean that's one of the things. I mean, I teach, still teaching workshops, and that's one of the aspects that particularly if I'm working with children, and they'll have their parents in with them, and parents have this really bad habit of interfering. So I mean, there's a case of some things where it might be a little bit more challenging and the child might need a little bit of help to sort of move on to the next stage, but in general they parents have, you know, they kind of just take over because they can see a child struggling, but rather than just helping them through that, they'll try and just do it. And I just have this habit of here you go, you have this, get on with that, and then I guide the child through to the next stage. And it's we're probably all do that as parents sometimes, where it's like, you know, wanting to help, but it's not helpful. So it's, but I think once they then get involved in their own creativity, they relax a bit, and it's nice seeing what they're doing and also working next to their child in a very different way. So
one of the other best things we've recently got is an electric pencil sharpener as well. So there's a couple of kids who come in and just spend half an hour sharpening all our pencils for us. Over the moon, they're having the best time. We're getting sharp pencils back out of it. It's fantastic, really. So the other thing I wanted to just ask you about, because it comes up as a theme in your work from time to time, is stitching on money.
Yes
Tell me about stitching on money.
That started with Artistic UK, which was a charity. And they approached me after I'd done my solo exhibition in 2018. They approached me about, they had all these old fivers, out of tender fivers, and wanted to, so they were sending them off to different artists to do some work on, and then the selling them to raise money for the charity. They approached me about doing it, and then I was my first one was Time is a Brisk Wind, which is the Queen asleep on the banknote. And I the reason the idea came to me was because I was thinking about, you know, money being passed through hands and how busy the Queen always was, and that it must be a bit knackering, and just and that sometimes you must feel like, oh, you know, just want to have a rest, and especially if she was getting a bit older then. And it was but also this idea of money passing through hands, and I suppose and then out of tender as well, and time and things like that. And it was I did this the piece of her asleep, and then I was contacted by the Cashy's King people, and they were doing an exhibition at the Saatchi Gallery, and they asked me if I wanted to be involved in that. So the two pieces I did for that were to do with I suppose I was thinking about money, and how it's down to people. It's, I mean, money itself isn't an evil. It's just how it's used. And I was thinking about greed and also, I suppose, survival as well, because I did some pieces on the Sumatran tiger and orangutan. I had hoped to do some other pieces as well, and but I'd ran out of time. But the how they're becoming extinct, and I mean, when I did it in 2018-19, there was only about 400 Sumatran tigers left. I don't know how many there are now, but they're, with all of the species that are there, they're becoming, the land is being poached, and they're either being killed or shipped off for you know, to be made into medicine, or kept as pets and things like exotic pets and things like that. And there's all kinds of stuff going on. So there's, and I think it's really difficult, because when you look into something, you have one viewpoint, as I say, about the element of the animals becoming extinct, but then you've also got these people that are having to survive in some way. And you don't live in their environment, and you don't know anything of how, what they experience in life. So it's all about kind of a balance of understanding. So those pieces were to do with the extinction. But there's also that, obviously, that connection with money and the impact that it has, or the way people use it or need it. But I did use the hanging threads in those pieces because of the, you know, the kind of disappearance of those animals. So those, I've done a few pieces, and then more recent, I haven't done a piece in a while. I mean, my son and ex-partner was telling me, you should do more money pieces because people seem to really, really like them. But I'm not the kind of person that can just kind of churn out work. I have to feel like there's a really strong connection with what I'm doing, and the pieces I have done, there has been a really strong connection. And I mean, a commission piece I did where it was three different pieces to do with America, and it was to do with American politics, and it was in connection with I've forgotten the artist's name. It was a Neville Brothers version of a, his name will come back to me in a moment, song, sorry.
That's all right.
Complete blank. It was the In God We Trust, so
right.
Song.
Okay.
So it was really interesting because the original song had a certain amount of verses, and then the Neville Brothers song was added to, and I've seen the guy in concert as well, and I can't remember his name at the moment.
Bob Dylan.
Dylan. Yeah, sorry. Right. So yeah, that was the original song, and then these because the Neville Brothers one was a later version, it had other verses added because of obviously politics had moved on. But it was really interesting researching, looking at the song. So I was given the song as the starting point, and then researching into each element of the verse. So so I did a lot of research before I started making the pieces, and then kind of closed in on certain aspects of them. But so those are really interesting pieces to make. And unfortunately, at the beginning of the Ukraine war, I was actually contacted by some media, sort of Russian news people, asking me if they could use my images and interview me, I presume because of the connection with America, and I had to kindly decline. It's like, yeah, I don't want to get involved in that. Thank you.
Strange geopolitical commentary.
Yeah, yeah. So it has had some interesting connections. So But more recently, I've done another charity piece. So, so it's been fun doing those pieces. They aren't easy to work on because, again, they're just paper. And it's one of the things with banknotes is depending on whether it's an older banknote or a newer piece, because I've worked on 10 shilling pieces, old fibres, Indonesian rupiah and all kinds of different things. So it's... all of them have this different quality to them. And so you think that, you know, you're working on one piece and it'll inform the next piece, but actually it doesn't, because as they've evolved, they've been made out of different materials, and they always need backing with canvas. And I still, again, use water-soluble stabiliser.
Right.
But they seem to survive in the water bit, so... Yeah.
I'm kind of fascinated as well, because you're a self-confessed big artist. You know, you were saying before about using charcoal and how big you go. And then this is a real size constraint on your work.
Yeah. Yeah, it was quite, it is very difficult, especially eyes. My God, they're like the tiniest eyes ever. Mm. If you did see a piece up close, you can see the disintegration of the banknote. It's just, they do start to break apart. And
do you use a magnifier at all?
No.
Just take your sweet time.
I have really bad eyesight. I'm like Mrs. Magoo. And I've got three different sets of glasses, sort of one for distance, one for, you know, normal, like reading and being on the computer. And then I've got my sewing glasses and I still struggle to see. It's just really... I sometimes have my nose right up against the work, and I've almost got my hair getting tangled in the sewing needle.
That's
funny. So yeah.
Yeah, it's glasses thick as milk bottle bottoms.
Yeah, yeah.
As well, probably, isn't it? That's okay. I love that. Right, let's go and do some cultural touch points, shall we? Let's pivot. See how we get on with these. Tell me about your favourite band/album.
Okay, so I don't have a favorite band or album.
Brilliant.
I have extremely eclectic taste in music, from folk, classical to rock and indie and all kinds of things. So I listen to a bit of everything, although I probably am more of a rock chick than anything, because I do like to have a bit of a bounce around the kitchen when I'm cooking. So the I think when I used to, it's weird because when records were more of a thing, I mean, I know they're more of a thing now, but when I had a record player, I used to play records all the time, and I would just like wear out albums from listening to them so much, and probably with CDs as well. But now with things like Spotify, I've got my own, you know, I can make my own albums, so of different mixes. So I tend to do that. But this last year, and it's kind of continuing into 2025, I've been listening to really big songs that I can sing really loudly and badly to.
Okay.
In the car or the kitchen, much to the despondency of everyone around me. So things like Benson Boone and I've gone back to some old music as well from the 1970s, where I can just, you know, really let it rip. So that's my song choices.
Do you listen to music while you're working?
Oh, it's a really strange thing, because sometimes I can have either the radio, absolute radio normally, in the background, or I'll put a Spotify on, and then I can cope with it with certain work, but then other times I just have to have complete silence, and it almost becomes like this grating thing if I've got some music on. I can't quite cope with it, and I think it's usually if I'm finding things a bit challenging that I need that full focus. But if I'm in a joyful, happy spot and the work's going really well, then yeah, it's usually the radio in the background.
Do you have to listen to the machine much?
Yeah, only if it's sounding like it's going wrong.
No, right, yeah.
Which
yeah.
sometimes happens quite a lot. Especially when it gets fluffed up with a lot of lint and I need to, and it's just not doing what it should be doing.
Yeah,
and
I have
a big clean out.
So I guess
to anyone listening, if your machine is not doing what it should do, it's probably the lint needs cleaning out.
Lint or the occasional fringe hair if you've been staring a bit too closely at it.
Something like that.
Fantastic. All right, what about TV and film? Got any favourite sketch share?
Yeah, well, I grew up just watching loads and loads of film, and I had that element in my degree, and I've also worked in a cinema as well. I used to be able to go and see all the free films. I absolutely love film. So again, I don't have one favourite, I have lots of favourites, but I think if it was going to be anything, it would be maybe Room with a View, and because it's a very close book adaptation and it's just a really beautiful film. But I also have a penchant for children's films. I love The Iron Giant and El Dorado because of the humour, and Toy Story, and I just I find children's films utterly joyous, and children's books actually, but it's yeah, I like, but I just like everything film-wise.
I sometimes find if the girls go away, for the weekend and I've got films to myself, I often think, oh yeah, I'll watch so and so and such and such, and now I end up watching like Wreck-It Ralph or some other Disney film or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You just go, actually, I don't want to watch Reservoir Dogs now. I'd much rather watch like, what? I don't know, something soft.
I keep saying that though. I mean, some of my, I'm to the other extreme, I really love zombie films, and I love things like Shaun of the Dead, and I mean, Pulp Fiction, it's not a zombie film, but it's something a little bit more visceral. So I think again, I have quite extreme taste in that, and I mean, even recently, you talk about TV, I love some things that have it a bit darker and that you can get your teeth into. So I've been watching Squid Games, and and I was absolutely obsessed with Ozark, because you just didn't think it could get any darker, and then it did.
It was shot really dark as well, wasn't it? Like
they had
really dark colour palettes and stuff.
And something that really grips you, but then I can also like Emily in Paris, so.
There you go. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense when you think about it. That makes a lot of sense. Interestingly, Betsy Greer, who was Needle Exchange, Harriet's the one before you, Betsy's the one before her. Room with the View was her favourite film as well.
Oh, yeah.
There you go, that's quite handy. No, that's great. Okay, what about a good book? And now you've said that, what about a good children's book as well, just for the heck of it?
Okay, so well, book again, it would have to be Room with a View, because more, I mean, I have other loves, but it's but I have read that book more than any other book.
Okay, what is it about that book then? Imagine I'm just a man who's never really paid it much attention.
It's just terribly romantic. But it's again, it's the humour. I was actually I did E.M. Forster at school, and it was in A Passage to India, and that literally killed the book, just going over and over and over it again. And it wasn't, well, for me personally, it wasn't his best book. But I started reading his other books when I left school. And then I discovered this kind of beautiful, these characters just have such beautiful connections, and the characterisation. And just the humour in it. And he was a humanist, so it's and an individualist. So, and that really, that kind of connects with me. And I think, and you'll find that you've got these characters that are flawed, but there's also something that you really just connect and love about them. So, and Room with a View is, and it's set in Italy, and it's just, the descriptions of it are just beautiful.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, then, what about a children's book then, seeing as you've opened
A children's book. Sorry, I forgot about that. I mean, I love the Harry Potter books. I have read those quite a lot. Just trying to think. Something like Ballet Shoes by, was it Noel Stretfield? I think.
Right, okay.
Yeah, just something where I don't know. Oh, and I used to love. I loved all the Saint Trini and Saint Trinians, Saint Clair's, and Ranelagh right. Towers, Mm-hmm. Blighton.
You can't
go wrong with her. And the Faraway Tree. I mean, I used to read that to my son, and we both absolutely loved that. So
We've had to do a bit of editing on the Faraway Tree because there's a lady who's called like Miss Slap or something. Some of it hasn't aged as well as it could have done with Ranelagh Blighton, yeah. But and some of it every now and again.
They're so imaginative. And,
yeah.
I mean, if anything, I probably go towards fantasy books in general. Mm. So anything where I can just disappear into the storyline and it's as far away from reality as possible.
Mm.
Good, yeah.
Children's books are interesting because, yeah, so my daughters are 5 and 7 now, but there's quite a lot of books like things like The Giant Jam Sandwich. There's these books from like the sort of 70s where the illustration's kind of funky looking, you know, and it's sort of in some ways it works. And then they're a little bit weird, or like The Winter Bear or The Cow That Fell in the Canal, and all these stories that don't seem like they're worth telling now, but they sort of did back then or whatever. And we've got quite a nice little collection of those. I think there's a certain style about them.
Well, I think your toddler books as well, just going back to those when I'm enjoying when I see my great nieces, like going through those again that I would have done with my son. And and go talking about illustration. Oh my God, there's just glorious illustration in the books, and some of them again can be quite dark. I mean, Not Now, Bernard is a brilliant book, and you know, where it's you've got this kind of parents that are terrible parents. And it's I like anything where it's a bit of humour. And
also, like, we've been my mother-in-law's got a lot of the old stories of like the Pied Piper and the little match girl, and most of those just end in tragedy, like the Pied Piper taking all these children off and burying them in a mountain and stuff.
Yeah,
and you're just like, oh my God, like, try and find me one that ends happily, for God's sake.
Yeah, I mean, fairy tales are I very much connect with fairy tales, and again, that's something I kind of explore in my work. I don't it's not like, again, very obvious, but I connect with that symbolism in it, and and I think and that darkness as well. It's I'm looking forward to embracing my dark side a bit more this year.
it feels like there's something's going to happen, like you were saying about the stuff to do with auras and the stuff to do with symbols and all those kinds of things. It's also, again, not to keep referring back to previous needle exchanges, but there are many good episodes to be had. But Katie Thume, you know, she talks about she's created gods. She's pulled like gods out of her consciousness or whatever, you know, and all those kind of symbols and all those metaphors of things. I feel like you've done a lot of stuff that's quite grounded in reality. It feels like maybe you're going to go into unreality now, and that's going to be really interesting to see where it heads.
I hope so. And I think it's also that kind of really, because it's a real personal connection with the work I'm going to be doing, and it's going to be a little bit more risque as well, which I suppose tapping into that kind of adult fairy tale themes of things and exploring sensuality and just relationships in their kind of rawness. So I'm really excited
about space, I think,
hopefully
yeah, I'm excited.
Things are a bit busy at the moment, but I'm hoping to get back in the studio soon. So
A fact that not a lot of people know about Alison Carpenter Hughes, then, if you please.
Okay, so I had to really rack my brain for this one, but I am a descendant of the silk weavers of Spitalfields. And I know this because one of my cousins, my many, many cousins, because I come from a huge, huge family, he did our family tree and traced it back to 3 brothers that came across. They were Huguenot refugees, and they came across in the 17th century. And they were escaping religious persecution.
Okay.
So the silk weavers of Spitalfields are quite famous. And I found, so my cousin did this family tree, but then we found out more connection to these brothers because I was on holiday in St Agnes in Cornwall with my ex-husband and my son, and we were staying in a B&B, and it was in the evening, and we'd had a long day out watching a bit of TV, and Who Do You Think You Are was on,
right.
And this old sepia photo came up of this lady, and my ex-husband said, "That looks just like your mum." And at that point, the name Jubok came up, and that's my mum's maiden, was my mum's maiden name.
Right.
And it was Julia Sawala.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely fabulous actress. It was to do with her family. And I got on the phone to my mum and dad straight away and was like, put the TV on. So I'm actually related to her. And so we found out all about these silk weavers through this program. So yeah, so it was a weird kind of connection.
God, yeah, textiles are deep in your DNA, aren't they? Yeah,
well, that's what I feel. I feel like, you know, I've textiles is natural.
So, it's your destiny.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. We we went to London last week and we're down at Spitalfields. It's very fancy around there now, I tell you.
It's
not so much silk weaving, but if you want to pay £7 for a cup of coffee, they got you there.
Place to go.
They got you there. Yeah. Hey, Alison, thanks for having a needle exchange with me.
Thank you. No, it's been an absolute pleasure. I hope I haven't waffled on too much.
It's been perfect. Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's needle.exchange, with any thoughts, comments or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needle exchange. See you next time.